Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
I've been trying to figure out how to introduce this topic, and I have no idea how to introduce it.
Because I think you got to introduce it with a shameless plug.
Oh, that's right. Shameless plug. You're right. We can start on a happy note.
WatercolorsAquariumGallery.com. Pew, pew.
If you like what we have to... That was good laser sounds, by the way. If you like what we have to say, check out our really cool t-shirts. Okay. And other stuff and lots of products.
And plants. Yeah. So yeah. Do that.
Good plants. Good stuff.
Okay. Are you ready for the discussion now? Did I buy you enough time?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
So I'm kind of pissed off. I apologize right away because I'm going to vent. I'm going to rant. I mean, okay, we've heard a rant not too long ago. We're not going to go quite that bad. And I'm being totally serious here right now. What are we doing to our hobby? We do this because we love it. You have been listening to us now for over a year talk about all these really cool, really fun topics, all this awesome stuff that we do, all this awesome stuff that we see other people do that we can't wait to talk about it, that we get excited about, all these things that we get excited about. I am so tired of people coming into our store that have been given, pardon my crudeness, shitty advice. From people that should know better. I had somebody come into the store and say, I bought this all-in-one setup from... Okay, and I've debated whether or not we should actually use names or not. And we're going to not use names. I'm going to not name particular companies, but you guys are going to know exactly who we're talking about.
And frankly, the names don't matter because it's across the board.
It doesn't. Big box stores that are chains and the store brand from this big box store. And this kid was all excited because he got his 10-gallon tank and he wanted it to look just like the picture. And the picture... Wait. I have it. I actually went to check. I went there to one of these big box stores today to check. What was he talking about? And the picture of the beautiful display is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14 neon tetras, which is fine.
Okay.
A ram and two yellow labs, African cichlids.
Oh, come on. They were doing so well.
I know. This is the picture that they're using to sell their aquarium. This is a company that makes aquariums. And the picture they use is a setup that won't work. Why is this okay? All right. So then I said, all right, let me look at another one. And here's one from one of the big store brands. And this is a 14-gallon setup. And at first glance, I'm like, you know, this one might be okay. It's got some platies in it. It's got a dwarf gourami in it. It has some neon tetras in it. And then it has a royal placostomus in it. That's a 12-inch placostomus.
Right. And it was probably right next to the tank where they sell them to 10-gallon tanks.
Oh, no, that's the other thing about it, right? They don't have royal placostomuses at big box stores.
True.
Right.
But the common's just the same.
Oh, come on, guys. Then there's a 5-gallon, and this one's got a neat little thing on the top of it that the fish might be able to swim up into. This 5-gallon tank has 6 neon tetras, 3 platies, and a betta in a 5-gallon tank. Come on. What the hell?
And it's just as easy to do 30 seconds of research and learn that a yellow lab is a 6-inch fish.
And it'll eat your neon tetras. And it's a terrible choice. So I wonder sometimes when people have this attitude about the aquarium hobby that, oh, it's too hard. I don't think I can do that.
Right.
Of course they think it's too hard. They tried what was suggested to them by a company that, why would they have any reason not to trust it? How would they know? How is this not supposed to be a reasonable thing? And they put these fish together and they had crying children because they watched the yellow labs tear up the little neon tetras in their 10-gallon tank. And then they watched the yellow labs die because of the ammonia buildup in the tank.
Mm-hmm. And they got a little packet of fish food with it and followed the instructions. And now they are going to think forever that aquariums are stinky and nasty. Because they followed the instructions that said feed for 5 minutes.
Yeah, as about 3 to 5 times a day, as much as your fish will eat for 5 minutes.
Oh, we should have gotten some of those too. But they're even the good brands that I'm like, oh, they're doing really well. It's everything your fish will eat in 1 minute, twice a day. And then I'm like, oh, you got so close.
Yeah.
No less than that.
That's to me, that's at least with, if you're doing everything else right on your aquarium, that works.
It's within the realm of sanity.
It is in within the realm of sanity. But, you know, it, that's going to assume a whole lot of things on the instructions on the back. Here's a way to think about this, right? Who reads the instructions on the back of a can of fish food? Charles?
New people.
Right. Where do new people buy new first aquariums?
The first place they see in aquariums.
Probably a big box store.
Exactly.
Who at a big box store is going to tell those people about proper aquarium maintenance and water changes?
Probably not the kid who's trying to get through college.
What's going to happen if you put 10 neon tetras, 2 yellow labs, and some platies in a 10-gallon tank and feed them as much as they can eat in 1 minute, yellow labs, twice a day, and don't do water changes?
You're going to have dead fish in like 3 days.
3 days. Everything's going to die. And you're going to be sad. You're going to think aquariums suck. They're stupid. This hobby is terrible. I can't do this. I'm out.
And if you don't come to that conclusion, you'll think, oh, this is just the way that it's done. Like, I'm supposed to replace my fish every month. There are people who genuinely think that that's what keeping aquariums is. And why do they think anyone thinks that's fun?
You go to the grocery store, you buy broccoli, you buy cereal, you buy a Lunchable, and you buy some fish.
Yeah, you buy 6 more goldfish that you know are going to die.
Yeah, because that's what you do.
That bums me out. It makes me sad for people. I have so much fun with my tanks. It's not fair that other people don't get to have that because of a stupid picture on a stupid box.
And they could do it so easily. Big box stores can have their place. I'm not a fan of big box stores, right? But I used to be when I was new, before I knew any better. So why don't they do it right? They have so many more resources than a little store like us. Why can't they do it right?
Because how do I want to? I'm just going for it.
We're not holding back. I'm not holding back today, guys.
I'm just going for it. It's because it's not their business model. Like baseline, that's the reality.
You know what? You nailed it. Their business model is the average life of an aquarist is less than 2 years. So let's get as much money out of them as we can in those 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And we were just having that really great discussion today about some of our favorite customers that had a tank crash recently of no fault of their own. And when a tank crash happens, I expect people to get out of it.
Right.
These guys didn't, because they came to us and said, what could we have done differently? And we said, nothing. It was a crazy accident. How do we help you get back on your feet?
Right.
Like, that's all it takes. Like,
that's
to
it.
Just, hey guys, it's sometimes it's hard. This wasn't your fault. We've been through this every step of the way. I don't know what I would have done getting into aquariums if I didn't have that first setback, that first tank crash, that like, oh, this is my fault of it, you know?
Right.
There's that weird thing that, and this is a slight tangent, but like, it's something that is important to me and it's talked about a lot in my close social circles. We as a society are not very good at conveying the idea that sometimes you can do everything right and still fail. And that's just life sometimes. Like, you shouldn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
But that's mildly unrelated to this discussion. Get back to.
Well, so no, actually that makes a very interesting point.
Yeah.
Why are we, and I'm saying collectively, all of us, not just in this room, why are we allowing these companies, allowing is not the right word, standing by while these companies do everything wrong and still succeed? That's exactly what's happening, right? Okay, so more examples, right? Walking through the big box store, this would be the one that does not carry salt water. There is one that does carry salt water and one that doesn't. And I looked at some of their texts. And first of all, every single one, almost every single one of their tanks that had fish in it also had goldfish.
Really?
Like, this is a great combination.
Really?
Here's the glowfish. I'm looking at a picture of the glowfish tank. And by the way, two of the glowfish have ick. But there's also a goldfish in it. And then there was the African cichlid tank. Also had a goldfish in it. Right.
That's got to be someone trying to save them from the feeder tank. But why and to what end?
Yeah. And then they had koi. Right. And they say minimum tank size, 75 gallons, which.
I mean,
but they say right below that, maximum size, 36 inches, average lifespan, 50 years. At least they're saying that. But a 75 gallon tank for a 36 inch fish. What are you doing?
I mean, that's what my tanks look like in Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Literally just a fish in a box that's just about the size of it. Yeah, that's what you want, right?
Right. Then a silver dollar. 29-gallon tank for a silver dollar. 6-inch fish. Baleen sharks. Mm-hmm. Maximum size, 14 inches. But you could put a baleen shark in a 40-gallon tank. 14-inch fish in a 40-gallon tank. And so then I went on a little further, and this was the non-store brand. So there's two big tank manufacturers out there. This is one of the tank manufacturers. And the picture of their 10-gallon kit, 3 fancy goldfish in 10 gallons. And I had a moment where I'm like, okay, I need to reflect on that for a minute, because my first fish were fancy goldfish. And I had 3 of them in a 1.5-gallon tank. And it got me into the hobby, and I stayed in the hobby, even though I had 3 goldfish in a 1.5-gallon goldfish bowl. That was a horrible place for those goldfish, but I didn't know any better. There was no one to tell me. We don't have that excuse anymore, right?
Right.
It's not hard to figure out how big they should be. And even it says in the on the minimum tank size for goldfish in this one, it says 30 gallons, right? But they have a picture of 3 of them in a 10-gallon tank. Right. But I stayed in the hobby because of that. I got into the hobby. I didn't stay in. I got
because of that or in spite of that.
I got into the hobby because of that. And I remember buying a new one like every 6 or 8 months. Because of course they would die.
See, to me that feels more like your thirst for it exceeded the failures that you were seeing.
Yeah, that's a really good way to say it.
Like, yeah. There are definitely some of us that, like, that drive to get better, that drive to do it is part of it for us. But there are so many people that are like, hey, I just want a nice, easy thing that I can use as an educational tool for my kids and a first pet to introduce them to animal care. Like, should they need to succeed in spite of failure? Or would it be so much better if they were just set up for success in the first place?
Get a 1.5-gallon bowl and put a bed in it.
Yeah.
Now, I know some of the betta people out there are going to start bitching at me because I just said to go to bed in a 1.5-gallon bowl. And Amy and I even had that debate as to whether or not that is acceptable. And I get the argument for it. I also know the guy who was the top betta breeder in the world, and that was the size he kept his bettas in at the time. There's a debate there, but there's certainly no debate that it sure is a hell of a lot better than putting a goldfish in a 1.5-gallon bowl.
That's the thing. I love the debate. I think it's healthy for the hobby. It's okay for us to have different opinions about it. At the end of the day, a betta can live to its full size, to its full lifespan in a bowl, and a goldfish literally cannot.
Literally, that's true. Yep.
And so to compare the two is ridiculous, and anyone who wants to is having the wrong conversation.
Right. So I'm picking on these big box stores, and there are other examples. I'm actually going to go back to it when this discussion is going to veer a little bit to saltwater for a little while. because that I actually had to storm out, and fortunately no one offered to help me. Because I went in there with the intention of just looking and not talking to anybody. And then I looked at some of the saltwater stuff, and I was getting so infuriated that I had to leave. But we're picking on the big box stores. But I'm going to shift it a little bit over to the wholesalers a little while. And yes, some of the things that I've seen in big box stores in the past. Oh, and in grocery stores.
Yeah.
Right. But big box stores. No, you know what? I'm going to shift it to somebody, to a discussion I saw on the internet not too long ago. There's a guy, and I'm not going to name him. He has a little online fish business, and he regularly markets his little online fish business to local aquarium clubs. He is a local Michigan guy, and he is constantly posting things like tiger shovel nose and red tail catfish and monster fish. And monster fish keepers out there, sorry, most of the time you guys are wrong. Most of the time.
There's a few times you're not, that's pretty cool.
It's badass. Yeah. If you call yourself a monster fish keeper and you don't have a 300 or 600 gallon aquarium, you are not a good fish keeper. Yep, I'm saying that. Yeah.
Unless you're considering your Oscar a monster fish.
No, that's true. That's true.
In which case, all right, whatever.
You're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. But one of our team members here said, brought it to my attention. I said, yeah, I've been seeing that guy post. And he said, so what do we do about it? And I said, why don't you ask him publicly? It was I think it was a red tail catfish that he was talking about. And he said something about, you know, this fish gets close to 300 pounds. How many people do you know that can handle a fish like this? Isn't that kind of a weird thing to think it's okay to sell? And he asked it in such a really careful, eloquent way. And it actually turned into a fairly interesting discussion. The responses disagreeing with him, nobody got insulting. And I was kind of impressed. I expected him to get blasted.
Yeah.
He didn't get blasted. But the amount of people that defended the guy selling fish by saying it's not his fault, people are going to buy it, so why shouldn't he sell it? So we're going to put all of the responsibility on the consumer, right? No.
Yeah.
No.
It's the responsibility of the people who don't have the experience to know everything.
Yeah, the people that don't know everything, they don't know any better.
Wait.
Yeah.
So this is...
Debate it, please.
No, it's not a debate. This is a way that I really want people to think about it.
Okay.
When you're defending someone that's selling like that, it's... To me, it's comparable to defending like a pyramid scheme salesman. It's like...
Yeah.
Well, they were dumb enough to buy it. Yeah, but he was also the guy that's, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
Or somebody selling cocaine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like selling cocaine and saying it's not addictive. Right. Like, you know, oh, it's not my fault if someone does that. Well, it is.
It is. And it's wrong. And, you know, hopefully this guy reaches out to us. Again, I'm not calling names. If he's listening, somebody knows him listening, probably able to figure out who this is. You know, let's have the open debate. And by the way, I know I'm getting a little heated in this one, but I'm open to having a sit down talk about it, but no, I've been doing this for a long time and I'm pretty pissed off about it.
And the heat comes from like the scores of people that we've cleaned up the mess for that. Right. Like I feel defensive of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally every day.
Yeah, literally every day.
Literally,
I remember
every day.
Wanting iridescent sharks so bad when I was young. Same. And there was no, at that point, so I'm a little older than the internet, it was not easy to find information about iridescent sharks. Today, you can Google it, mm-hmm. and you can see that an iridescent shark can get 3 to 6 feet long.
And they're still for sale everywhere.
Everywhere.
I had a conversation with somebody 2 days ago that has one, and well, just so you know, those sharks are gonna get big and they're going to be a really difficult to take care of, but not in captivity, right? Usually they don't live that long.
Right. I've been doing this for 40 years. I've never seen an adult iridescent shark. Not one. I have seen one that was 3 feet, 2.5 feet at a public aquarium.
And you know that was a surrendered pet too?
It had to have been. Yeah, it had to have been. If you have an iridescent shark in your aquarium today, I am sorry. Someone sold you that and they should have known better. It is not your fault. It is the fault of the people that sold it to you. If you are a wholesaler or a retailer and you sell iridescent sharks, it is your fault. Take responsibility for it. Take responsibility for the fact that every single iridescent shark you have ever sold, every one of them, will die way before its time. Except for, notice the silence. Not one. I'm really sick of dying fish. I like fish too much for that. Moving on. I don't know. You know, it's hard. I wish we could figure out like how many people are just switching off and not listening anymore because.
Well, and maybe this is the direction we need to go with this, just because, you know, we want to talk about the industry generally and we want to talk about some of the negatives that we see in it. But frankly, the people who are listening right now probably agree with us. So what do we say to those people? Like, that's the question to me. What should they do about it if they think they're already doing the right thing?
Raise a voice and go complain. That's it. Raise a voice and go complain. If you're a plant person, go walk into a big box store and notice the Mondo grass for sale and think of how much joy you get out of seeing your plants grow in your tank. And think of the little 10-year-old who goes, "Ooh, mommy, that's pretty. I want that in my tank," and watches it die.
Yeah, and you think your hobby is separate from those people, but it's not. If people were successful in aquariums, it would make sense for people to culture boosts in mass for them in the States.
Yeah.
And you'd get boosts.
Instead of plugging it from the wild.
Right. That's probably a poor example, but it's the first thing that I could think of that people want that's generally unavailable. If more people are successful with aquariums, aquariums are better for everybody.
Right. And boost is what that actually, I think, Amy, boost is a perfect example because it is such an easy growing plant.
Right.
It is such a good beginner plant. By the way, I didn't see any boost for sale when I was at the big box stores, but I did see peace lilies and Mondo grass.
Although I was amazed last time I was at one, they had an amazing Anubias selection.
That's
they had like
good.
4 or 5 species of Anubias. They had 2 or 3 sword species. And from where things were there 5 years ago, that's already a huge improvement. It's not enough.
It's not enough.
But at least people may be able to grow some plants that they can buy at that store.
Amy, you had a conversation not too long ago with a wholesaler that was trying to reach out to us and say, "Hey, I think you should buy our fish because our fish are great." Okay, send me the list. What was on that list?
That list had both tattooed and dyed fish, tiger shovel nose, paku, tarpon. Think of what else.
Tarpon.
We've had at least 2 lists that have come to us recently with tarpon on them, which is like, that's one of the most ludicrous things to me. It's everything. Basically everything on our...
A tarpon, a paku, and a tiger shovel nose. Tiger shovel nose, by the way, can get 12 feet long. It's one of the largest freshwater fish on the planet. Goonch catfish. We've seen goonch catfish for sale. Mm-hmm. Goonch
channel
catfish
cats too, stand pretty
out
regularly.
For me. Channel cats are on there all the time.
Yeah.
Goonch catfish stand out because that's one of the few episodes of River Monsters that I saw. There are legends about goonch catfish eating people. It's legend that hasn't been proven.
But it's physically possible.
But it's been proven that they get big enough for that. Small people, but still. Why?
The tattooed and dyed fish thing to me, like, we are very picky about our wholesalers, but to completely avoid any wholesaler that has overlarge fish is almost virtually impossible.
It's virtually impossible.
The idea that there are still people buying tattooed and dyed fish is baffling to me.
Right.
So I'm going to poke at you guys on that one a little bit because I've been thinking very hard about this lately and I still don't know how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that someone selling a cleaner rest is as bad or worse than a tattooed or dyed fish? And here's the caveats that I want for the listeners to know.
That's an easy one for me, by the way.
Cleaner ass has a known negative effect on the reef when you take it off.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're affecting multiple fish.
Mm-hmm.
And that fish is doomed to starve.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it's probably going to harass your fish in your tank because it's so desperate to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm like, I'm waffling where I'm like, personally, I want to say I think the cleaner ass is the worst.
Oh, no question.
Well, then it's almost impossible not to poke and say, well, we order fish from places that have cleaner asses, but we don't order fish from places that have tattooed and dyed fish.
One of the places has cleaner asses. Our main saltwater wholesaler does not have cleaner asses.
Oh, I suppose they've had him like once or twice as bycatch, I think.
Yes.
Is what we've talked about.
Yes.
So never mind. Yes. Never mind.
And I called them out on it and they were like, yeah. We ordered a box and they put in substitutions.
Yeah. I forgot that caveat of it.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up the cleaner ass one because I specifically had a phone call today where someone got huffy with me about the idea of cleaner asses, where I was like, dude, they're a great fish, but they belong in the wild.
Yeah.
Like, they do not belong in a tank.
Nope.
Even the one that we had that we ordered from a respectable wholesaler that's acting in good faith, that knows that they were getting, they had a lot of like justifications. They got it from an area where they're not necessarily obligate cleaners. It was a young fish that wasn't an established, you know,
cleaning station.
All of the right answers. He still starved.
Yep. Still didn't make it. The only reason Charles had to have someone get huffy with him about a cleaner ass is because somebody else that person trusts told him something different, gave him a completely different story. The only reason I've had people get mad at me about wanting me to order them a fish that's going to get way too big for their tank is because somebody else they trusted told them it was okay. Because they walked into a big box store or a grocery store that had iridescent sharks or bala sharks. Balas are one of those that that's a tough one. So first of all, bala sharks were in this big box store. They said 75-gallon tank for a bala shark, and it says an 8-inch fish.
That's 8-inch fish that you need six of.
Yeah, and is super active. That doesn't work in a 75-gallon tank. So maybe a lot of you are asking, like, why is it a big deal? Just don't buy those fish. Maybe we ought to talk about why it's a big deal. It's a barrier of entry.
Yeah. It's not just a barrier of entry, but it's also like for me, it like, yes, it's a barrier entry, but for me, it's also like those fish suffer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that's as far as it gets for me.
Those fish suffer. Those people suffer because they watch those fish die. Here's another way to think about it. Right. And actually I wrote this part down. Right. So could you imagine that you could go into a pet store and buy a dog and have that lovely person behind the counter say, and this Labrador retriever comes with a 14-day guarantee. If this Labrador retriever dies, just bring the body back and a food sample and we'll give you a new one.
And it'll probably live just fine if you leave it in the bathroom most of the time.
Oh, we're not going to tell you anything about how to keep it. right? We're just going to make sure there's a guarantee on it. So you're
or feel at least comfortable that's what the sign says.
Buying it, right? That we would consider that absolutely atrocious. Part of the reason we don't think that's atrocious with fish is because the attitude of a lot of big box stores and grocery stores make it so that we don't feel like it's a big deal. Make it so that we don't feel like that life is as important.
Mm-hmm. And getting back to the cleaner ass example, that fish is fighting for its life.
Right. All these fish are.
Yeah.
Even that goldfish in the, you know, the feeder fish tank. By the way, we did a really good podcast on the top 10 fish that don't belong, or top 5 fish don't belong in the hobby. And feeder fish was one of them. You should listen to that one where Charles goes into detail about not just how bad feeder fish are, but how bad feeder fish are as food for your fish. So that, listen to that podcast. We don't need to go into that again. But in this tank full of feeder fish, every single one of those little goldfish is fighting for its life. By the way, that's not a claim about at all about it. I don't have a problem with fish that obligatory feeders that need to eat live food. Right. And that's it's not one, what that's about.
It's one thing to feed a fish, another fish, good food.
Right.
There's another completely different aspect when you're feeding a fish, right, another fish that's filled with disease, that is not nutritionally sound, that's not yada, 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 yada.
Right,
you
right, know right, what I mean? Right. Like why do big box stores sell feeder fish? Because they make it feel like you have to buy them, which makes you come back every week to buy more feeder fish.
And buy fish to replace the fish that your feeder fish killed by being right, nasty and full of disease.
That's true. I know of two commonly kept, aquarium appropriate, obligatory live piscivores. That means two fish that have to eat live fish or they're not going to survive. One of them, one time I managed to get onto something other than live food. And that's the Asian needlefish, which maxes, isn't, I think it's Asian. Anyway, it maxes out at about 8-10 inches.
So too small to eat feeder goldfish?
Right, but feeder guppies.
Other than the tiniest ones.
I fed it feeder guppies.
Yeah.
And then South American leaffish. Mm. They're motion predators, so they need to see something move before they're going to eat it. Everything else, including our anglerfish Lumpy, we have very easily and successfully gotten on prepared foods without a problem. So I don't want people coming back into this store every week to buy something terrible. I want them to come back and buy something good. If you have to go back to a store and buy a feeder goldfish every week, you are going back to the store and buying something terrible.
Yeah. And here's another argument I like to have a lot. Like it's genuinely fun, where you'll get that guy every once in a while, they'll come in and they're like, "Do you guys have feeder goldfish for my Oscar?" And I'm like, "That's not fun." And they're like, "Yeah, it is." And I'm like, "Or you could have a hand trained one that's eating krill." Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Like, that is cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Get him eating crickets and earthworms every once in a while if you really need to watch them kill something.
Right. Right.
I want to. Just something specific about an Oscar that's like, that wants to play with you.
Though. Yeah.
I know, right? What I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
I had a buddy in college that taught one to play ping pong. It made a mess, but it was
right,
great.
They're awesome pets.
Everything makes a mess in college.
Especially if you don't kill them with feeder goldfish.
I love that when people come in and say, "Yeah, I want a badass fish like a piranha or an Oscar." And my response is, "Wait, do you want a badass fish or do you want a piranha or an Oscar?"
Yeah.
See the most badass fish in the store? It's that little peppermint pike head downstairs that never does anything. Like, yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's one of the clownfish that actually bites people.
Oh, yeah. Clownfish are pretty badass.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just something about any organism that says, looks at something 500 times its size and goes, "I can take you."
You're not the boss of me.
And you know what? To be fair, they get us out of the tank most of the time.
So they do.
I guess they do.
All right. So I went in. You brought up saltwater, Charles. And I went into the big box store that carries saltwater. Mm. And from a distance, I walked up and I saw mostly clownfish, a couple of damsels. And I was like, all right, this is a little better than last time. Then I saw the one hippo tang that they had. Yep. That store actually didn't bother to put minimum tank size down, which, you know, that's why. And they did actually put 12 inches as maximum size for that tang. They didn't talk about tank size. So I really can't find that much fault with the fish that they were selling.
Did you have any fault with all the white coral and anemones that are in there?
The anemones. Okay.
Pure white.
Charles, what is the natural life expectancy of a sea anemone?
Theoretically, hundreds of years, if not longer.
Indefinite is the correct answer would be indefinite. They have total cellular regeneration. They can replace every single cell in their entire body. So they don't age.
I'm just thinking practically. I'm like, at some point, something's going to eat them.
Yeah. Which one of their children are you talking about? Like, right. They'll split infinitely.
But even the long tentacles, they don't split as quickly, and they can live forever. Like, literally forever, unless something kills them. That's why I said natural life expectancy.
So, just to give that nerdy, they're biologically immortal.
That's a good word. Well, I can tell you that the ones that I saw at this big box store were practically, for all intents and purposes, dead. They didn't know it yet, but they were dead.
Their lifespan is about a week after they get home and somebody blames themselves for it.
Right. Exactly. Because anemones are too hard. And they had a bubble tip and they had a long tentacle. And then they had a Haitian pink tip. Now, again, there was no one there to talk to me about care for these animals. There was no information I could pick up. And this was the whitest bubble tip anemone that I have ever seen.
I thought they were fake when I looked.
Yeah.
They were not.
Yeah. Under normal output fluorescent lights. Oh, and by the way, all their coral frags under normal output fluorescent lights.
I mean, they've got to just be replacing all of them almost every week.
I would think so. Although a leather coral it takes a long time for a leather coral to die. So they didn't sell any lights in the whole store capable of keeping an anemone alive.
Wow.
They sell the Haitian pink tips as beginner anemones. Haitian pink tips are members of the genus Condylactis. They are not beginner anemones. They are some of the highest light anemones out there.
Yeah, I didn't even know the common name of it because we don't get them. I'm like, oh, Condylactis, are you kidding?
Right. Yes. I believe Haitian pink tip is Condylactis. It's either Condylactis gigas.
It's hard for me not to feel like specifically that big box store is why we don't have yellow tangs anymore.
That's probably part of the blame. Yeah. Because of the amount of yellow tangs that die.
It's the bad press, the bad reputation. If stuff's going to die, it makes us all look bad.
Yeah. Fiji, Indonesia, and Hawaii have both had major shutdown issues. Fiji and Indonesia are sort of opened up again. Hawaii is shut down. We probably won't ever get it back. And they shut us all down because of propaganda about dead fish. And the problem is, most of the time, most of what they said about the amount of fish that died, they weren't wrong. Now, the impact we were having on the wild fish populations were totally inflated and they were wrong about that. But they had these pictures of thousands or hundreds of dead yellow tangs and the pictures were accurate because people screwed up and killed a bunch of fish. And then they go into a big box store, they see fish that aren't going to survive. And nobody says anything.
This long pause.
Hey, Amy, why don't you Google top five best saltwater fish for beginners?
All right. Top five. I'm just going to search best saltwater fish for beginners.
Yep.
I'm gonna do my best. Okay, I'll pull up one from a random pet site, like popular pet site.
What's the first one?
Here's 25 best beginner saltwater fish from a website that specializes in saltwater fish.
Hold okay. On. What's number one?
Green Chromis.
If they're saying a green chromis,
they say green chromis generally, but they do say peaceful. Okay.
Okay. What's number two?
Myacanthus spleni, clownfish, shark nose goby, bangai. That's a little rough. Tomato clown, canary blenny, long nose hawkfish, coolest looking beginner saltwater fish. Fight me. No, I'm just kidding. I love long nose hawkfish. Diamond goby's on here.
Diamond
that's
goby's
a ridiculous
is a beginner.
Oh, and as a fairly similar to the yellow watchman goby.
Nothing like watchman goby.
All right. So this is a hobby resource. Theoretically good. Sleeper goby's on there. That one's a little ridiculous. Engineer goby's on there. Nobody can actually keep an engineer goby.
Well, people can keep them, just not well.
Yes. Nobody can successfully keep an engineer goby by my definition.
Right.
Pajama cardinal fish can't go wrong. Oh, that lady we just talked to might disagree.
Oh, yeah. Let's tell that story. So I was just informed of the story today, so I'm going to introduce it, and then they can talk about the rest of how that story went. It's a customer who... And it's one of my
favorite...
Of course,
six-line wrasse. Sorry.
I hate six-line wrasse.
I had to get that one in.
Right. My favorite kind of customer is the one who comes in and says, I'm going to buy this somewhere else, but I need your advice. Like, I want to say, screw you. Get the hell out of my store. But obviously, I'm not going to do that. But that's kind of what I want to say, right?
Usually, I get it. Like, people are going to come from all different areas. They don't need to think we're the best, even though obviously we are.
Right.
To me.
We're anyway. Going to graciously come up with as good of an accurate response as we possibly can.
But when it gets... into the area of disease, that's when I start to get a little sensitive.
Right.
Because we've spent years developing our quarantine. We quarantine every single saltwater fish for 4 weeks because it's not an arbitrary time. It is literally the time that it takes for us to ensure that a fish does not have disease and that it's well conditioned. And that's the minimum amount of time that it takes for us to do that.
Minimum.
So this woman comes in and she's being respectful about it. But she says, I bought 5 pajama cardinals somewhere else. 5 pajama cardinals. Already a bad idea. They're going to kill each other. What can I dip it in to make sure that I don't get disease in my tank? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. I want there to be a better answer. It's nothing.
Nothing.
Can I use reef dip? No, it says dip, but it's not going to do anything for your fish.
And it's for washing parasites off corals.
Yeah, it's iodine. Okay, well, what about Paragard? Well, you can dip it in Paragard and it's not going to hurt them, but sorry, Paragard's meant to be used as a long-term bath. It's not going to work. Even if you could use it long-term, it's probably not going to destroy all of the parasites that you could be getting from fish.
If it were that easy... Ick would not be the scourge of a fish. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It just wouldn't.
Right.
And she called back today, and guess what? She has ick. It's inevitable.
Of course she has ick. And, I mean, I do blame her, in a way, for thinking... My first instinct when somebody says, hey, I bought this somewhere else, what should I do with it? You know, if you bought it from somebody else, they should be able to tell you how to take care of it properly.
Right.
If they don't, if they can't tell you how to properly take care of that animal, they should not be allowed to sell it.
Right.
There's a reason most states have laws now against buying dogs in pet stores. Yeah. We don't have those with fish. If we don't start taking better care of this hobby, somebody's going to find a way to take care of it for us.
And it's hard to say they would be wrong.
Right, right.
And, like, I'm not trying to punch down. I'm not trying to say, oh, well, we're so much better than anyone else. But literally, us here with what we were doing, if we had conjoined freshwater tanks, every single one of our fish would have ick. And I know that to be a fact.
Right.
There is no store that has conjoined system that doesn't have ick in every single one of those fish. I can't imagine how it would be possible.
Yeah.
I literally think it's physically impossible for every fish out of a conjoined system not to have ick if you're receiving fish every week.
Right.
And not treating every single thing fully before it goes in there, which is a at least week-long treatment in separated systems, whether it's freshwater or saltwater.
And I think a week is too long. I think 2 weeks is minimum.
Yeah,
if you were doing it. There's some scientific literature that disagrees with me on that, but there's some real-world experience that makes me think either A, the science missed something, which, don't worry, I get that that's probably not what happened. It's probably there was some real-world situation that their study didn't account for.
Well, yeah, even if in perfect sterile conditions, it's a week. In reality, it's two.
It's two, right. Minimum.
Because it's never going to be perfect sterile conditions.
Right.
I don't think that it's possible.
What this all gets to me is the term that I would use here would be barriers of entry, right? So we all want saltwater fish. We all want good, healthy fish, right? We all want to assume, rightfully so, that when we go somewhere to buy a fish, we should be buying a healthy fish. New people getting into the hobby have no background knowledge of fish disease or disease treatment. They go in with the assumption, be that in a grocery store or a big box store, or here, why would those fish be different? Why would there be something wrong with those fish? What this grocery store sells me really good tomatoes. They sell me a box of cereal that has never once had mold in it. Why should this fish be any different? And it is different, and it's going to be worse, and they're not going to do well, and it's going to be a sad situation, and it's a barrier of entry.
And barriers for entry with this woman... Eventually, when I had told her, sorry, that's not going to work enough times, she said, well, what do I do? And I said, you have to buy another tank for those fish because that's the only way to stop it from getting into your display.
Right. Oh, and you have to buy it a week ago.
So now you need not only the one tank that's hard enough for you to figure out. Now you need to figure out how to do a quarantine tank, too.
By the way, that process took us 4 years to figure out how to do.
And I can show you how to do it at home, but... it's just as expensive as setting up another tank you want.
Right. Right. So anybody own a retail store or work in a retail store out there listening today thinking there's no way you could afford to do that? So let's talk about an industry standard. And when I first heard this industry standard, I went, that's sick. Oh, by the way, not the term sick that these 20-year-olds are using these days.
Oh,
to
that's
say,
bad.
That's bad, dude. No. This is actually, this disgusts me. That industry standard is a 60% survival rate. That means 60% of the fish you get in your door need to make it out of the door alive. Only 60%. That means that the business model suggests that if you lose 40% of the fish that come into your door, you could still be profitable.
Man, if we have a 60% shipment, I'm like doing a shot, walking away and not coming back.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, no doubt. We're done. Lock the door. Right. We're done.
You know, a freak accident is one thing, but 60% just because of disease? Are you kidding?
Right. So we spent 4 years developing this quarantine process. And oh, by the way, we will tell you, even if you are a competitor, exactly how to do it. In detail. We'll even write it down for you.
Well, we did an entire podcast on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And if you have questions about the podcast, come talk to us. We'll show you. This is not... we had a long discussion about whether or not we're going to share that information. So then we did the math on how much it costs us to quarantine fish. Turns out, if we spend $100... I'm just doing the math here to make it easy. If we spend $100 on a batch of fish... it costs us $40 to quarantine it.
It worked out spooky similar.
40%.
Yeah. It right? was like oh, by so the way, close.
We have a 94, 92% right now.
Yeah, that's probably average. Some of these are small shipments, so losing one fish
right.
drives it down a little bit.
Right. Yeah. What that means is it doesn't cost Wait, us.
I want to really drive home how cool this statistic is, by uh-huh. the way. Keep in mind this, like, 60% survival rate from as the industry standard. This is usually like they're getting an order in every week, every other week.
Yeah.
Our survival rate the first 30 days is over 90%.
Right.
Yeah. That's versus just, 60 over 7.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. It's like.
That means we're not just at a 92 to 94% for the week we have it in the store before we sell it. We're at a 92 to 94% for a month at least.
Before it goes on the right. sales floor.
Right. It means it doesn't cost us any more to quarantine. We just don't kill as many fish. We're not more profitable because we have a 92%, right?
Right.
It doesn't make us more money because we don't, we get to make the money on those fish. That the money we make for that industry standard loss, acceptable loss. Yeah, acceptable loss. Acceptable Oof. Dead fish. How about acceptable loss for puppies? What if we're talking about puppies, right? Oh, 60% of that, of the 100 puppies we had, they survived, right? Yeah, we only lost 40% of them. We're good.
Ugh.
But that's okay when it comes to fish. It doesn't have to be that way. If big box stores sold Anubias and Crips and fish that were actually good beginner's fish, that would get them into the hobby and keep them there. And they get mm-hmm. new people on the, they already know they only need to keep it for 2 years to make the money they need. So fine, take their money for 2 years and then send them our way. Fine, take that money, but do it right.
Yeah. And I think the money or the math that we did even included the time it takes to do water changes on separate tanks versus.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like that's oh, part yeah. of it. It's not just like, oh, staff or whatever. It's like literally the time it takes to maintain separate tanks right. to do it right.
The cost of the systems, we were thorough in our investigation of how much this is going to cost. Yep. The math worked. It was crazy. It was yeah. silly.
And that's not like brag, weigh us. It's, this just works. Why isn't everyone else doing it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Why aren't we keeping people in the hobby? Why is a business model replace your fish so we can make more money? That's stupid. Solution.
Okay.
Where does the responsibility lie?
Yeah.
Yeah. So barriers to entry are what this a lot of this talks about, and you know, a lot of dead fish too. But How should that model work? We talked about how the business, we figured out how to make the business model work for us. Where should that responsibility lie? What place do all of us have in this crazy hobby that we're talking about? How's the way to do it right? And, you know, we talked about it for a while, so I know what I'm talking about. I must be right. This obviously at this point, I'm just trying to come up with some solutions and, you know, maybe put, maybe plant the bug out there about what if a lot more people like us think about and try to find ways to do it right. And so what's a way that could make it work? Whose responsibility is it, right? And I thought about, well, why is it that the wholesalers can't provide us with quarantined fish? That's not a model that works.
Wholesalers' responsibility is to get stuff to us as quickly as possible, particularly wild caught, like saltwater stuff.
As quickly and ethically as possible.
Right.
Right. They need to do ethical, sustainable collection or ethical, sustainable farming of organisms that are appropriate for the hobby. Wholesalers that are selling iridescent sharks and cleaner wrasses and panther groupers need to take a really close hard look at it and what they're doing. Expecting the industry trend for saltwater right now is expecting saltwater aquarium hobbyists to also set up quarantine tanks.
That just seems to be the direction.
Right. And actually, I have a book written in 1989 that talks about that as being what you should do. That doesn't work. I mean, yes, those of us that are experienced hobbyists that killed enough fish realize that we have to do that because getting quarantined fish is extremely difficult. But to expect some kid getting excited about the hobby and going to save up a bunch of money from his part-time job and wants a clownfish tank that he should also learn how to set up a quarantine tank, that's too much of a barrier to entry. That's going to keep people out of this hobby.
Or like our long-term customer who has a, who doesn't have a huge budget for a tank, but really likes saltwater fish. And she's got a 29-gallon tank.
A 40 breeder.
A 40 breeder, really. Yep. A 40 breeder that's got...
You're talking about Deb?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's got... It had a pair of clownfish and a royal grama.
Yeah.
And... She doesn't need to know. She doesn't have the time in her life to research everything about where those fish come from, research everything. She's just coming to us for advice, and that's okay.
She wouldn't have been able to afford to set up a quarantine tank and that tank.
No.
And she has had the Royal Grandma for 6 years.
Yeah.
Right? And it was her very first aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
She'd never kept an aquarium before. She said, I want to do it careful. I want to do it right, and I don't have a lot of money.
And
I said,
okay, want clownfish.
And I want clownfish. Here's how you do it. Mm-hmm. She did it. She's successful. She's doing awesome.
Yeah. It has a hang on the back filter on it. It's nothing fancy. She adores that tank and she should be allowed to.
Yes.
And she's brought her husband here. She's brought her friends here. They come in and they're like, oh man, this stuff is kind of cool. And she will tell anyone who will listen, fish have personalities. Fish mean something. This is important. And this is something we need to protect.
And it's easy.
And it's easy. And she can do it. And we can help her with it. Like, that's what it's all about to me.
Right.
And she should be allowed to do that without having to set up two tanks.
Let's take out those barriers of entry. Let's call out those people that are putting up those barriers of entry. That's websites that are talking about six-line wrasses and butterfly fish as being good beginner fish. That's wholesalers that are selling tattooed fish and iridescent sharks and pacu to the general public.
Mm-hmm. That's, well, we pulled up a bunch of top 10 beginner fish list, and one of the most popular social media personalities, one of the most popular local stores, both had common goldfish on their lists. You got a voice, like, right. Use it properly.
Use it properly. The particular individual Amy is talking about, a very, very popular YouTuber, he even says in his little blurb about common goldfish, 29-gallon tank, they can get 8 to 10 inches long. What the hell, dude?
Yeah.
A 10-inch fish?
Two common goldfish in a 55? Are you kidding? Have you seen that last longer than a year?
Right. You know what? You could do it. 75% water changes once or twice a week. You could do it. That's not healthy. And he doesn't say that on the instructions, right? Left that part out. Come on, man.
This is the thing that is like, it's like, for me, just because we as hobbyists right now, like, and this is me speaking to the audience, the people at the table, we as hobbyists, as experienced hobbyists, because if you've been here in this particular podcast this long, you have to have been here a while. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, right. We have a voice and we have an experience. If we want a future in our hobby, we need to make it more accessible to new people. And we need to have the hobby as a whole take responsibility for itself, or it will be taken away from us.
Right.
That's take responsibility. The reality. Like at this point, hobbyists cannot afford to be apolitical as hobbyists.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's not sustainable.
I came up with all kinds of just these horrible, atrocious examples, and I could have gone on for another hour about horrible, atrocious examples, but I think Amy's even tired of me listening to me talk about that. I can't blame her. Obviously, it's something that I'm a little passionate about after the amount of time I've been doing this. And I came into this knowing that I did a lot of these things. But this is the information age. We know better now. And all of those in the hobby, those companies that put those pretty pictures of tanks that are absolutely impossible, they know better. Mm-hmm. So it's time to take responsibility for it. It's time to figure out how to do it right. It's time to figure out how to do all this stuff right.
It's time to ask questions about it. Next time you're in a store where you think they have something that you shouldn't be selling, don't be aggressive. You don't need to berate the minimum wage employee that's working there, because they don't, they're working this part time, like Charles said, just to get through college, right? But you can still say, hey, so why do you have that?
Yeah. Write an email to the company with the picture on the tank, the picture of their tank with the neon tetras and the yellow labs. Hey, I see this as a picture on a tank. Does that actually work? And why do you have that as a picture if it doesn't? Ask the questions. And I, the example that we talked about with our employee who asked the guy about, you know, the online seller about those catfish, that was a perfect example about, it was a friendly discussion. Nobody got crazy. Nobody attacked. Everybody gave their opinion, some informed, some misinformed, but everybody just talked about it. And that's what we need more of.
And you're not going to convince the people who are disagreeing with you. Maybe you will. Maybe you'll get lucky. Maybe things will be civil and you'll be able to get through. But somebody else is watching.
A lot of somebodies are watching. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can make some changes out there. I really appreciate everybody who actually is still tuned in today. I know I get a little dark sometimes, and I might have been a little overzealous, a little overpassionate about it. But you know, it's a big deal.
We do this because we love it. We don't want to see it go away, and we want to be able to share it with other people.
Yeah. So shameless plug, go look at our website. And Amy's wearing a really cool Aquarium Wars sweatshirt with her Betta design in the back. Both Amy and I designed all of these cool fish images, and I'm a little bit mad that her Betta is the coolest one.
I don't know. That Episto is pretty sweet. I might need to get an Episto shirt too.
It's a good one. That's what I have, is the Episto shirt.
So, that one's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, all that stuff is really, it's just so we get to keep doing this. We love talking to you guys. So keep it up. Send us your emails. Agree or disagree with us. We're still happy to hear from you and being able to engage with people. Let's say kindred spirits around the world has been really amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you could come on down to the gallery and ask us what really cool fish we have in. Or in my case, today with the mood I'm in, ask me which fish I'm fretting over.
Yeah, if you are a listener who stops in, please let us know. Not that we don't want to give everybody the VIP treatment, but we kind of like you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for listening to this rant. Let's have lots of fun, even after all of this. And let's keep those hands wet.
Keep those hands wet. I got to finish my beer now.